This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's get back to Plumbers 911 Football Monday with Rami Makhlouf on Sports Radio 670 The Score and live on the free Odyssey app. Plumbers 911 Football Mondays are presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and by Busey Bank.
And I'm with you until 5 a.m. to kick off a Plumbers 911 Football Monday, along with special guest host Dan Durbin, winner of the Cubs for a Cure auction, to sit in on the show today. Tyler Farengol on the other side of the glass on the ones and twos, as he always is for this show. He has slated up Matt Eberflus, Caleb Williams, Josh Blackwell, Dan Quinn, Jaden Daniels, and we might hear from the guys from the Bears postgame show before all is said and done between now and 5 a.m. But right now, we mostly just want to hear from you at 312-644-6767. Get it off your chest. I know you can't sleep, Bears fans, after they lose on a Hail Mary to the Washington Commanders today. And we want to hear from you. 312-644-6767. All the way out in Arizona listening on the Odyssey app is Jeff. Now you're on The Score. What's up, Jeff?
Hey, how's it going? First of all, I just missed Terry Bors and RIP Doug Buffone.
I second both of those.
I watched the game, as we all did. Went to a bar and thought we had it in the bag and gut punch. Probably been sad. I've been listening here and there since the game ended. That call with the fake refrigerator Perry, you know, the mini fridge of Doug Kramer, that was just an awful call by Shane Waldron. I don't understand why he's the offensive coordinator. They had a chance to hire Cliff Kingsbury, and I'm not saying he's like the second coming of whoever, but Shane Waldron isn't the guy. He's just not.
He's certainly,
like, at least with, if they would have hired Cliff, like, I mean, he had camaraderie and a connection to Caleb. And I mean, I think Matt Eberflus is a really good defensive coordinator, but I think that's his ceiling.
Appreciate the call. It certainly hasn't inspired a lot of confidence when you talk about the job that Shane Waldron has done as the offensive coordinator. And man, people will try and poo-poo or downplay the whole Kingsbury Waldron thing, or the Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels thing, or tell me I'm overreacting and I'm being impatient when I compare those two and I say, why does that look like that and this looks like this? Because that's all I'm saying. Like, right now, at this moment in time, at this point in time, if you want to tell me, well, you got to be patient, Rami. It's a rookie quarterback. It's a first-year offensive coordinator. You know, the kinks got to get worked out. Guys got to gel and find their rhythm. Well, okay, but they seem to be doing it at a higher level, and that's not a finished product yet. Like, what Cliff Kingsbury and Jaden Daniels are building under Dan Quinn over there in Washington, that's not a finished product yet either. Like, it's not like I'm comparing him to Tom Brady. It's not like I'm comparing him to Patrick Mahomes and going, well, why doesn't it look like that yet? No, I'm comparing it to two guys who are in the same position that the Bears are in and going, why does that look like that? And this looks like this. That looks better. I want this to look like that.
Yeah, you know, Caleb had his first half nerves and whatever, but I kept asking myself, why isn't there a pass to Cole Kmet? Why isn't there like one long pass out so you can loosen things up? It was so tight in that first half. That's coaching. That's coaching. That's not the player.
No. That is 100% coaching. This from the 773. Speaking of the eye test, I know I already read that one. I don't believe Eberflus has a win after a bye in his Bears tenure from the 7-7-3. Yeah, you might be right on that. From the 7-7-9, does Kari Blasingame score on that play if it's him instead of Doug? I don't want Kari Blasingame getting the ball there either.
Roshan Johnson.
Look, dude, you used the number one pick on Caleb Williams. You spent a bunch of money on DeAndre Swift. You traded for Keenan Allen. You traded for DJ Moore and spent a bunch of money on him. You drafted Rome Odunze in the first round, and you're turning around and handing it to a guard? Yeah, a guard? I don't want it handed to a fullback either. Give it to the guys that you hired to do the job of scoring touchdowns. Any of them.
I don't understand, because Caleb Williams is making some really athletic plays with his feet. Yep. It's going to hurt you to call a one-yard sneak with an athletic quarterback up the middle to take a touchdown. They haven't done it yet. Not even in short yardage situations that aren't on the goal line.
Yeah, no, you're right. They haven't called a QB sneak on the goal line. And what was okay? It was third down. I thought it was second down. It was third down on that play. But even still, man, Roshan Johnson, all the guys I just named is who I would prefer. But if you're not going to give it to any of those guys, fine. Roshan Johnson. Like, there's so many guys on the list that I think of before I get to Doug Kramer or Kari Blasingame if he was still here.
Pencil in all of the above. As your answer,
no. Taking both of what you both said, you know, that's kind of why they have RPOs, a little run pass option or something, because you can use the athleticism. We didn't see that. Instead, you give it to who? A guard.
Let's go back out to the phones. 312-644-6767. If you have things to get off your chest, if you need to yell, as I've been doing since we got on the air at midnight, let's go to Alexander from the West Side. You're on 670 The Score. What's up, Alex?
Hello. What's up?
You. What's going on, buddy?
I was just saying that I think we've got to stop hitting on the Bears, the Bears offense. I think... it's like, I don't think we're going to, like, I don't think our goal, like, should be, like, making the playoffs. Like, chill, like, bro.
Well, what should the goal then be?
Get a better offensive lineman and a better coach.
Well, yeah, I'm saying they should have done that by now, Alex. That's what I'm hating on, dude.
You think so? Like, I don't, like, it's only week 8.
Yeah, that's halfway, like, Alex, that's halfway through the season.
And the rest of the games is going to be against our division.
Yeah, it only gets tougher from here.
Yeah, this is the beginning of a rebuild. Like, I mean, like, I don't think we're going to, like, make the playoff this year, like, especially with how good the, like, our division is.
You know, like, Alex, I got to say, man, I admire your patience. How old are you, dude?
I'm 14.
14? And you're up at 1 a.m.?
Yeah, I nice. Can't get over the loss.
Do your parents know you're up at 1 a.m.?
Probably not.
All right. I appreciate the call, but you might be sitting in this chair someday soon. That's either, he knows his stuff. Alex knows his stuff, but that's either like the he might just be too young to feel what we're feeling right now. You know what I mean? Like, either sometimes there is wisdom with youth and maybe we all need to be a little more patient like Alex is, but there's also the fact that he hasn't felt the pain that we felt, and he hasn't watched and lived through this vicious cycle that we keep living through as Bears fans of watching them use resources and assets to go and get what we think is going to be the savior and franchise quarterback and then just break the dude, you know what I mean, and do stupid stuff time after time after time.
I'll just say this. When I was 14 years old, the Bears started the John Fox era, of the dreaded eras of all time, so... Oh, it could be worse than that.
And do you know what the John Fox era was? I hate to do this. I really hate to. This is going to ruin people's mornings.
I actually shouldn't have said era. I should have said error instead.
Fair.
What was it, like 12 and 36?
But the John Fox era,
his record,
ended with him as a deadbeat coach who was in the last year of his contract, who you just used a first round, and you just use a first round pick to go and get him a quarterback. So he could sit there and be a lame duck coach for a year until you hopefully got the right guy the next year. And they hired obviously, Matt Nagy, and then did the same thing with Justin Fields of bringing him in as a lame duck coach. And now we're sitting here with Matt Eberflus apparently looking like a lame duck coach and a first-round draft pick at quarterback. Like, I hope it takes a different turn than we saw it take with those examples that I just gave, but this feels awfully familiar. And Alex is only 14, so I don't know if he remembers John Fox. He's old enough to remember Matt Nagy and Justin Fields and how all that played out and how we got to where we are now. But this is a vicious cycle that we see over and over and over again with the Bears, of this sort of shingling of a GM who drafts a quarterback, and then that GM is fired and he comes in, hires a new coach, and the quarterback isn't the guy they wanted, so they go and get a different quarterback and then probably a different coach before they fire the GM, and then he goes and gets another quarterback and we start this whole thing over again.
Yeah. You know, I admire the patience that Alex has. I'm actually a very patient, optimistic person. However, you don't have to be patient or optimistic about stupidity. There's a difference. We could be 1-16 and we can still say the same thing about plays that should not be called. Like, so,
like I said before, I have patience for Caleb Williams. Yeah. I have patience for Rome Odunze. I have no patience for anyone not named Rome or Caleb in the Bears franchise. None whatsoever. You have zero excuses and you're out of time. You need to perform now. And games like this, where you get flexed onto the national stage and pee right down your leg in front of America against the first good opponent you've had since week two, raises a lot of questions. Raises a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. This text from the 630. Has anyone discussed the fact that the Washington clock operator failed to start the clock on the Bears' two-point conversion? 23 seconds was left when the TD was scored and 23 seconds left after the two-point conversion. Then on top of that, the clock operator added two more seconds, so there was 25 seconds left when the next play starts. The guy also added another second to the clock when there was 5 seconds left to give the Commanders 6 seconds. They should have never been able to run their final play. I didn't, honestly, if that happened, I didn't catch it. I don't think the clock runs on a two-point conversion, does it?
I don't think it does.
Clock does not run on a two. So that would explain that. He gave three other instances of the clock operator giving Washington extra seconds, but I don't believe the clock runs on a two-point conversion.
Yeah, but the refs were jumping in, too, on this stuff about that. So, if you want to go the conspiracy theory, that means the refs are in it, too. I don't think that really made a difference. I was more disappointed about the no defense with 5 seconds left, that they got that extra 10 yards without any defense.
And a lot of people are giving the refs a hard time about not calling holding on the Hail Mary. There was two guys that were being held right in frame if you're watching it. But listen, man, if you don't have 36 yards through three quarters of football, it doesn't come down to the referees. If you don't throw a screen to DJ Moore on 4th and 1, it doesn't come down to the referees. If you don't hand the ball to a guard from the goal line on 3rd and 1, it doesn't come down to the referees. It doesn't come down to 3 seconds that the clock operator added. None of that matters. And honestly, if Tyrique Stevenson and whoever else is back there does what they're supposed to do, again, the referees don't matter. Even for all the other stuff that you did terribly the rest of the night, you still had a chance to win that one. I'm not putting this on the referees. No. I'm not at all putting this one on the referees. When you had, 111 passing yards in the game? 111 passing yards. And I'm going to point a finger at the refs? No. This offense was putrid tonight, last night. I still got to get used to that. It's the morning. Good morning, everyone. Let's go to Ted from the South Side. You're on 670 The Score. What's up, Ted?
Hey, how you doing? Hey, well, yeah, I called about the coaching, right? It's not very good. But I want to say I was 14 when the Bears won in 85. That's how old I am.
Okay.
So is that good?
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. Congratulations.
Yeah. I'm older than you guys.
Do you have that patience that 14-year-old Alex had, or no? Are you all burned out on patience?
Oh, this is terrible, dude. This is what you guys have been saying. I've been hearing this all night. Why wouldn't you draft the number one overall quarterback, number one pick, and bring in a new coach? Offensive-minded coach, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's disgusting, dude. We're watching this today, and I don't know how they lost that game.
I appreciate the call, Ted. Thanks, man. Yeah, that's a guy who's been beat down from a life as a Bears fan. We had both ends of the spectrum of Bears fans and back-to-back calls. We had young Alex, who's still got that glimmer in his eye, you know, that glimmer of optimism still flickering in his eye. And then Ted, who's had it beat out of him, who's just had that life beat out of him through how many? He said he was 14 when the Bears were in the, so he's like 55 years old. Alex, that's your future, bud. I hate to do that to you, but if they don't figure this thing out, that's your future right there, Alex. Eventually you'll get to that point. Here's a text from the 773. In some ways, I believe Alex is right. Bears fanatics tend to inflate the possibilities of their team when there are positive improvements. I don't believe Eberflus will be the coach when the Bears are truly in contention for a Super Bowl. We need to step back and enjoy the journey. What was to enjoy about tonight?
There was nothing to enjoy. That was the point. We can, up to this point, we can say, oh, this is good improvement. When you take a step backwards on national TV, and to use your words, to pee down your leg, there's nothing to enjoy.
I was enjoying this game for about 36 seconds tonight. That's how long I enjoyed this game. From the time they scored that touchdown to go up 15-12 to the time that the Hail Mary landed in the hands of
Noah Brown.
Noah Brown. That's how long I enjoyed this game for. When you talk about enjoy the ride, I enjoyed this game for 36 seconds tonight. The rest of it was painful to watch. All of it. Like, okay, I jumped up off my couch when DeAndre Swift had that 56-yard touchdown, because to that point, I'd made a groove in the couch from sitting there so unenthusiastic, so unexcited, so unhappy about anything that happened in that football game that I was ready to jump off my couch. But really, I enjoyed 36 seconds of this football game tonight. You can't tell me to enjoy the ride after what I saw tonight. And I don't think that we inflated the possibilities of this team and their positive improvements, as the texter put it. Again, this is week 8, year 3. Mm-hmm. Of the Ryan Poles rebuild. Mm-hmm. Okay? We shouldn't be here right now. We shouldn't be sitting here talking about an offense that had 36 points at half, or 36 yards. I wish they had 36 points at halftime. Mm-hmm. Had 36 yards at halftime. Unacceptable.
I'm going to go back to my naturally optimistic stage, and I was taking 3 pages of notes, and up until that time we scored the touchdown, I didn't have any positives, and I was trying to do it. The only positive I could come up with was that even though we had a punt forever, and how many times?
7, I believe.
Yeah, 7. Our punter, Taylor, was our MVP of the first half.
Yeah.
He was.
No, he might 7 punts for 341 yards, and I think 3 or 4 of those landed, or 5 of those landed inside of the 20. I think 3 of them landed inside the 10-yard line. He's been maybe the brightest spot of this season. Like, seriously, when you look, like, in terms of guys performing above expectations, guys and where they rank in their position group, Torrey Taylor has maybe been one of the brightest spots of this season. But that just tells you how bad this offense has been.
Exactly.
I wish we didn't know. I wish we were sitting here in week 8 going, should they have used a 4th-round pick on a punter? You know what I mean? No. I would like for that to feel wasted right now. I would like for that draft pick to feel wasted right now, and for that to be what I'm questioning. I would like for that to be what I'm questioning instead of an offensive line again. I would like that to be what I was questioning instead of an offensive coordinator. Again, I would like that to be what I was questioning instead of a head coach again. But no, we're sitting here talking about, man, doesn't the punter look great? Because you punted 7 times and had a turnover on downs in one football game. I bet I could find, and you know what? It might be the one that we saw tonight. I could probably find you teams in the NFL who haven't punted 7 times all year.
Yeah.
Much less 7 times in one game. You know what I mean?
Maybe Detroit?
Maybe. I don't know if that's factual or not. I could be exaggerating. I could just be angry and exaggerating right now. But 7 punts in one night, man? 7 punts in one night. You gave the ball to them 8 times via punt and a turnover on downs. And then a 9th time on the fumble at the goal line. I'm supposed to enjoy the ride? I'm supposed to have patience about that? I'm sorry.
Can't do it.
I don't. I don't. 336 says the worst was using a lineman to run at the goal line. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All of us are sitting there going, what did you just do? Like, and that's the thing about the Bears this season and so many of the things that have gone wrong for them. Whether it was in the Houston game and Matt Eberflus using 2 challenges on plays that we were all sitting on our couches going, that you shouldn't challenge that. You know, you have a whole system. You have like people in place to look at this and tell you whether or not you should be doing it. And I'm better at doing it from my couch, whether it's that or whether it's Shane Waldron calling the worst sequence of plays I've ever seen from first and goal inside the 5 against Indianapolis, whether it's 8 to 10 penalties in a football game, whether it's handing the football off to a lineman at the 1-yard line, whether it's another wide receiver screen. I almost just cursed there, finger on the dump button, Tyler. Whether it's another wide receiver screen on a 3rd or 4th and 1, I'm supposed to have patience for these things. These are things that I'm waiting for their growing pains for them not to do this dumb crap that they're doing as veterans of the NFL, as guys who have been around this game and have been doing these jobs and other jobs that led up to these jobs for a decade or more. When we're talking about Matt Eberflus and Shane Waldron and guys who have been in this league for 2, 3, 4 or more years, when we talk about the offensive line, these aren't people who deserve our patience. These are people who should be playing at a certain level to this point, and Ryan Poles' rebuild should be operating at a certain level by this point.
Wasn't there a questionable completion by Washington where we didn't challenge, we didn't come in fast enough, and then later on,
yes,
CBS basically said, oh, yeah, look at that. That was not complete.
No, it wasn't.
Washington hurried to the line, Dan, to your point, and Matt Eberflus has been kind of on and off with challenging this year as it is.
Again,
they had no chance to get that off.
Right.
There's so much about this that should be better at this point. You know what I mean? So much about this that should be better to this point.
I have a thing going back to what you were just saying too, Rami, about everything should be better. It's not like they're in a situation where everyone's looking and saying, oh, look at these guys. They're a bunch of newbies trying to gel. Most of the league doesn't have a lot of continuity. So really, when you think about it, coordinators change like crazy now in the NFL. Nobody is really super used to their staff, their coaches, except for like 2 to 3 teams. Everybody has to deal with a lot of change in the National Football League. You're not singled out being like, oh yeah, you're special here. You have to get a certain amount of time to adjust. Everybody's adjusting in the NFL.
A couple of weeks ago, I was going to say, I think you were producing that show, Tyler, but I don't think you were. I have a different producer every time I come on the airwaves. They let me grab this mic once or twice a week, and I always appreciate it. But I was asking the question, who's the measuring stick for the Bears? Like, who am I supposed to compare this to? Because whenever I do, whenever I take a team, and tonight it's Washington, who, like I said, you have a first-year offensive coordinator working with a rookie quarterback, and I'll take it one step further, who are playing for a defensive head coach. You know what I mean? Like, it's a similar situation. But whether it's that, or whether I look at the rest of the division and I see the Lions, who in year 3 of their rebuild went to the NFC Championship, and then I look at the Packers, who didn't even need a rebuild after trading a Hall of Fame quarterback. They went right back to the playoffs with the youngest roster ever to go to the postseason. Or whether I look at the Vikings, who never needed a rebuild or a major dip after letting Kirk Cousins walk and taking Sam Darnold off the scrap heap to be better than you this year. Or whether I say, okay, so the rest of the division isn't a fair measuring stick. Let's look at coaches hired the same year as Matt Eberflus. You have Mike McDaniel, who at this point I will take over Matt Eberflus. You have Kevin O'Connell, who at this point I would take over Matt Eberflus. The third one is Brian Daboll, who, let's call it a wash. You know what I mean? Honestly, that's the best you could probably do.
And Brian Daboll beat Matt Eberflus in 2022.
If you want to compare it to GMs hired the same years as Ryan Poles, Kwesi Adolfo-Mensah was hired in Minnesota the same year. They're ahead of us. Omar Khan was hired in Pittsburgh the same year. They're ahead of us. the other two, Greg Penner and Joe Schoen for Denver and the Giants, respectively, not really working out that great. But I can, like, whatever you want to take, whatever situation, and I know there are variables that set every situation apart, and none of these are exactly alike. But whatever situation you want to take, whether we're comparing it to the division, whether we're comparing it to other coaches hired at the same time, other GMs hired at the same time, or like we have tonight with a first-year offensive coordinator working with a rookie quarterback, who, whatever you want to cherry pick to compare the Bears to, they're behind. Mm-hmm. It's week 8 of year 3 of Ryan Poles' rebuild, and whoever you want to compare them to, they're behind. They're not moving as fast in the direction that we want them to move as other teams are. That's just facts, dude.
You know, with Ryan Poles' personnel moves, you know, I'm going to sit back for a second and say, yeah, you know, you hit, win some, lose some. It's like I can't get anger at Ryan Poles yet. I can't get past the anger about keeping the coach and the coaching decisions that are being made right now. I'll table Ryan.
I actually, there was something I might bring up later in the show. I can question some of Ryan Poles' personnel moves.
Ooh, let's talk.
Not just some of the ones, most of the ones he's made have worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
Some of the ones he didn't make, or some of the choices he made instead of getting guys that were out there on the market. I have a list, and we might get to those a little later on in the show, but we also will hear from Matt Eberflus, Caleb Williams, Josh Blackwell, Dan Quinn, Jaden Daniels, so much more to come on the Score Overnight Show on a Plumbers 911 Football Monday here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. But we still want to hear from you at 312-644-6767. Rami Makhlouf with you here on the Overnights. Tyler Farengol on the other side of the glass. Dan Durbin, winner of the Cubs for a Cure auction, to sit in on the show. And we're all back right after this, right here on The Score.
Let's get back to Plumbers 911 Football Monday with Rami Makhlouf on Sports Radio 670 The Score and live on the free Odyssey app. Plumbers 911 Football Mondays are presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and by Busey Bank.
More caffeinated than the last segment, and I'm with you until 5 a.m. with Tyler Farengol on the other side of the glass. Dan Durbin, special co-host for the morning, winner of the Cubs for a Cure auction, to sit in that co-host chair. And you guys at 312-644-6767. If you want to get in on the show, get those thoughts off your chest about a Bears heartbreaking loss to the Commanders, 18-15 on a Hail Mary to end the game. It is a Plumbers 911 Football Monday presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and Busey Bank. Still to come on a Football Monday, of course, Mully and Haw a little later this morning. They're joined by Brad Biggs at 6:40, immediately followed by Olin Kreutz at 7. DJ Moore joins the guys at 8. Midday show, jam-packed as well. Anthony Heron joins Bernstein and Harris at 11. Mark Schlereth at 12. Dan Wiederer at 1, and Kurt Warner at 3, Mark Grody at 4, and Jalen Johnson at 5 on the Spiegel and Holmes show tomorrow afternoon. All part of a Plumbers 911 Football Monday as they break this thing down, put it back together, and break it down again as the Bears fall, as I said, 18-15 to the Cardinals. That's next week, to the Commanders on that Hail Mary to end the game. 312-644-6767 from the 815 to Did Torrey Taylor have more punt yards than the entire offense? That is a great, great question, quite honestly. Let me go and take a look at it. The Bears had, they had 307 yards of total offense, and Torrey Taylor had 341 yards of total punts.
My man.
You move the ball more off the foot of Torrey Taylor tonight than you did off the arm and legs of Caleb Williams and the rest of the Chicago Bears. That's a good catch, dude, because that really puts into perspective and really frames how ineffective, how futile the Bears offense was in this football game. Like I said to open the show, I was going to come in here screaming regardless. You know, like I would have taken the win. I would have been happy with the win for what it meant in the standings. 5-2, chance to go 7-2, 6-game win streak with the next two games that you look at on your schedule being Arizona and New England. So for the sake of the standings and what it means in that context, I would have been happy with the win. But as far as where this Bears team is at, their progress, and especially on the offensive side of things, I was going to come in here pissed off, no matter what the final score was. Like, I'm extra pissed off because it's a Hail Mary to lose a game and probably the most devastating gut punch I've felt as a Bears fan since the double doink. But I was going to come in here pissed off regardless about the way that they played in this football game. Eight penalties for 60 yards? Yeah. Go ahead, Dan.
I have to tell you, all credit to Pat Manley. Pat said it's so great. He goes, win or lose, if we had won, he says, these were the game stats of a loser.
Yes. Yeah. That nails it. That 100% nails how I felt about this game through three plus quarters tonight. You can't have 33 yards of offense at the half and expect me to have patience. Try to explain that away by saying it's a rookie quarterback and a first year offensive coordinator. That's not a level of football that anybody should be playing at. It just isn't. And by the way, I will harp on this again. You were going against a first-year offensive coordinator with a rookie quarterback who was able to move the football at a much higher clip than you were. And I know they only had, they had 12 points before the Hail Mary. So you do got to give the Bears credit, their defense credit, for not breaking and holding a Washington offense that's been able to score a lot of points to 12 points to that point in the game. Excuse me, but they were able to move the football on the Bears throughout the game.
Yeah, 481 yards.
Yes.
And all credit to stopping TDs and keeping to field goals. But 481 yards, come on.
And by the way, I was on the air on Saturday talking about this football game, and I said I wanted Jaden Daniels to play because not only I want this team to win. But I want this team to be tested. I want questions to be answered about this football team. And that includes the defense. Because as much as we can sit here and harp on the competition the last 3-4 weeks and sort of analyzing what the offense has done and how much stock we can put in that, how much it was fool's gold, we do have to remember that while, yes, the Bears were third in total yards coming into this game, first in opposing quarterback passer rating, seventh in passing yards, fourth in scoring. They did do that against Will Levis, Anthony Richardson, Andy Dalton, Trevor Lawrence, and Matthew Stafford without his two best receivers.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
We do have to look at the competition from that side too. And entering this week, the Commanders came in ranked first in scoring. Now you contained that. You didn't let them go crazy in terms of getting in the end zone. But they were third in total yards. They were able to do that against you. They were second in rushing yards. You were able to contain the rushing game. They didn't do a lot on the ground. And Jaden Daniels came in with a 75-plus percent completion percentage, best in the league, and a 107 passer rating, which was seventh in the league. And honestly, you didn't do a lot to change that. He went as you just pointed out, for 326 yards and a touchdown. And they put up 400-plus yards on you and won the time of possession battle by 5 minutes and won the turnover battle because for once this Bears defense wasn't able to get any takeaways. In terms of this being a test for the Bears defense and a better test than what they've faced here in the last 4 or 5 weeks since CJ Stroud in week two, I would say I'd give them like a C. You know, if this was a test coming into this game, I'd give them a C you get credit for keeping him out of the end zone, but for the way they were able to move the football up and down the field on you, maybe a C+.
And I have to tell you, Washington Commanders really can't be proud about how they played. And I will tell you, if I did a deep analysis, I think of those four field goals, there was many gifts from the Commanders' screw-ups themselves as there was good defensive play by the Bears.
Yes.
So I agree with the C. I agree.
A C for the Bears defense, an F for the offense. Failing grade for the offense in tonight's game against the Washington Commanders. And you fall 18-15 on a Hail Mary. Want to hear from you at 312-644-6767. Give us a call or shoot us a text. Let's go to Dave, who's in Rock Falls. He dialed that number. Now he's on the score. What's up, Dave?
Hey, I just want to say the Bears need to get another coach. I'm out in Arizona here. Came out here for the Bears game next week, and my sister and I went out to a couple local breweries, and the two we went to had Walter Payton jerseys everywhere. I mean, they're the Bears are basically, of course, out here, they're, you know, a lot of Chicago people out in Tempe, Phoenix area.
Mm-hmm.
But Eberflus, I feel like they're wasting such a good opportunity. Last year, my wife and I went to the Denver game in Chicago, and they were up, I think, 27-7 at half. I might be off a little bit with the score there, but I had never heard so many people walking out when everyone's filing out in the long walkway, calling for Eberflus' job. And to me, he's just a rah-rah coach. And I, you know, they say the players like him. Maybe they do. But they need to make a decision on this guy. They're just wasting time. And I've been a fan for like 57 years probably.
Dave, appreciate the call, man. And you're spot on when we talk about Matt Eberflus. Look, if your argument for Matt Eberflus coming into this year was, well, we don't know yet. You know what I mean? Which was really the best you could do in defense of him. You couldn't be like, no, he's a head coach because of X, Y, and Z. If the best you could do in defense of Matt Eberflus going into year three as a head coach in the NFL was, well, we don't know yet. That's not good enough. Like, we should know by now. We should know by now. And when Dave says the players like him, I will say this about Matt Eberflus. From what I gather, some of this is from watching Hard Knocks, also from just reading, listening to the scores, et cetera, et cetera. He seems to have like some pillars of leadership down, relationship building, communication. These are things that good leaders need to do. And it's great that he has those in his tool belt. But you know what he needs to have in his tool belt? Being a good football coach. Like, making the right decisions when you're standing on the sidelines. You can build all the relationships you want. You can be a great communicator and have good culture in terms of everybody's happy, everybody likes who they work with, everybody believes in each other, et cetera, et cetera. But at the end of the day, and we say this with players a lot, as a coach, you need to go out there and execute. You need to call the timeout when you see your team isn't set up to stop the Hail Mary at the end of the game. You need to not challenge calls that we're all sitting on our couch going, no, you don't challenge that. You need to challenge calls that we say, why aren't you challenging that? But it's obvious. You know what I mean? If you're Shane Waldron and you're a coach, you can't make some of the calls that he's made. It's amateur hour. Some of the stuff that we watch these guys do. And it shouldn't be like that at this point and stage in their careers.
You know, the positive attributes you mentioned to Eberflus, that sounds just like the perfect high school coach. That's what I want in my high school coach. At this level, though, when they already acknowledge we better get a good offensive coordinator because we got a defensive guy, oh, well, let's get Shane Waldron instead of Kingsbury. Now we're talking the NFL, and now those attributes just aren't enough.
This text from the 773, we all know what kind of head coach Eberflus is. Our sample size shows us he is a better-than-average coordinator, just like we realize Justin is a capable second-string quarterback. That is an A-plus text right there. That,
harsh reality.
Yes.
Yes.
You nailed it. You 100% nailed it. Yep. Because why were we ready, and I'm not saying we shouldn't have, but why were we ready to throw Justin Fields out the door when he didn't have a chance to win because of what he was surrounded by for 3 years? But Matt Eberflus doesn't get that same treatment. We all go, well, give him a chance. He didn't get a real chance. Well, maybe there was a reason why he's never gotten a real chance. Speaking of Matt Eberflus, we do want to hear from the Bears head coach. Here's what he had to say after the 18-15 loss in Washington today on that last second Hail Mary.
Okay. Just got out of the locker room. Obviously, the guys are disappointed. You know, when you lose a game like that, you know, that's a tough one to swallow after coming back. But also told them in the same conversation that was really excited that, how they battled back, you know, and they battled back to win that game, to be able to have a chance to win that game. So, it's important to look at that, too. And with all the offensive linemen that we had in and out of there, I thought the guys battled in there. The pocket was firmer in the second half, I thought, was good. We drove the field twice at the end. And you know, I know there's going to be a lot of questions about the Doug Kramer play. Again, I got to look at the handoff. That was one of our one-yard plays, you know, from in our goal line package. I've got to look at the operation of that. And we have, you know, three or four of those. But, you know, and then obviously the defense's response to that was excellent. You know, go three and out, force a punt. We get it back to midfield, and then our offense converts, you know, a couple times on third down. You know, get them down there. And, you know, the one-yard, first and goal on the one after the DPI, you know, that's a run. He has the option to throw the fade if he likes the matchup. You know, so that's what he did. And then second one right there to Doug. And then the fumble. You know, so that was it right there. You know, then I'm sorry, and then we scored on the second one. And then, you know, they had those plays at the end, and it comes down to that last play. And we've practiced that play 100 times since we've been here. And again, I'll have to look at what the execution was of that, but we have a body on a body, boxing guys out like basketball at the very end. We have one guy that's the rim that knocks the ball down. We got a back tip guy that goes behind the pile. So again, I got to look at it and detail it out and make sure we're better next time. But again, that's a hard way to lose. But again, I was proud of the way the guys battled all the way through. But go ahead.
Who is the back tip guy on that play?
Yeah, it depends on where the double bump guy is, right? So the guy that we were boxing out, you know, that was 17. You know, so it depended on where he was.
That was the play that decided the game, but there was a lot wrong before that for you guys offensively and defensively. Just offensively, why were you guys not able to get anything going until the end?
Yeah, you know, it's you know, sometimes when you have those days, you just got to make sure you keep finding answers. You know, some of the answers could have been, you know, getting the ball to our tight ends and running backs as I look at the stat sheet, you know, there. I know we were trying to do that. You know, they did pressure with their linebackers. We knew they were going to do some of those. We thought those, you know, those were effective for them. So we got to do a better job handling those. But, again, it's always about just working to the next series and finding answers, and we got to do a better job of that.
Coach, some people would say that the Bears didn't deserve to win the game anyway. Yet and still, you guys had it won and it slipped away from you. How do you prevent that from being a season-defining loss that carries into the next few weeks?
Yeah, our guys believe in each other, trust in each other, have faith in each other. They're a resilient bunch. You know, they're going to come back more determined. Again, the game didn't go the way we wanted it to at certain points. But again, at the end, we got it going in our direction. And, you know, to be able to have a chance to win it. And, you know, did everything we could at the very end. We just got to execute better.
Matt, that second to last play before Hail Mary, 13-yard strike, they get out of bounds in 2 seconds. Are you preparing that play for them to run some kind of shots at the end zone laterally, or is that something where you're – how do you look back on that spot?
Yeah, because you're defending touchdown, right? You're defending touchdown there, and them throwing a ball for 13 yards or 10 yards, whatever that is, doesn't really matter. It's always going to come down to that last play. And it came down to a 2-second play to the last play, and we got to execute on that one.
Why don't you guys bring extra pressure?
That's an option, no doubt. I've seen people do that. You know, we have that. But, you know, again, we chose to do the three-man rush. Again, I think he had it for over 12 seconds. I'm not sure what happened back there, you know, in terms of, you know, blocking and, you know, getting after it, the quarterback. You know, TJ adds in a little bit on there, too, because he's got the running back. You know, like I said, execution.
So I guess regardless of who the guy was, when you look at whoever the back tip person was he not there?
I got to take a look at it. Yeah, I got to take a look at it.
Any thought at all on your behalf to veto the the goal line play to Doug when it came to your headset?
No, it's a play we worked. We've worked that play since he's been in there. And we've worked it, worked the mechanics of it, you know, the handoff to him. And we just got to do it better. It's just, you know, wedge blocking, and you're on the 1 yard line. You got a big guy getting the ball, and so we've practiced it a lot.
The logic of that call with the game on the line to give it to an offensive lineman—that you're on board with that.
It's a 1 yard play. It's a 1 yard play, and we felt that a big guy like that taking a dive could do that.
What did you see in terms of Caleb? Some of the struggles he had, especially in the first half.
Yeah, you know, again, the progressions. You know, I thought he, you know, got off him a little bit. I have to look at it. But again, the rhythm and timing that we've seen over the last couple weeks, you know, just, you know, again, it could be guys that recovered or got, you know, pressure in his face, whatever that might be. But again, that's an everybody thing. You know, that's a protection thing, that's a route running thing, and that's a quarterback thing.
What was your diagnosis of the run defense trouble today, and as part of that, containing Jaden Daniels?
Yeah, Again, he's a tough contain. You know, so we got to do a really good job of that. And you know, we did it with four, we did it with five, we did it, you know, with you know, four off of one side, you know, three off of one side, two on the other. So we did that to some success. And I thought we really did a good job on, you know, in the second half and the third downs. You know, we were pretty good on the, in the first half on third downs as well, getting ourselves out of those drives. But again, the first series, I know we didn't fit the run the way we wanted it to. You know, we talked about that on the sideline. But again, we got to be more consistent.
Are you concerned about the way you guys played, defended Daniels? Because he's not one of a kind. There's other. You'll face a guy next week who has similar skill set.
Yeah. I mean, again, when you don't win the game, we're certainly going to look at it. And if we won the game, we'd go back and look at it and see if we can do a better job.
Just before the half, you guys had it 3rd and 12 down in the scoring zone. You went max protect. What were the breakdowns on the max protection, but also the coaching point to maybe know when to fight for another one and don't take yourself out of field goal range?
Okay, now what play are you talking about?
3rd and 12, you guys were down in the scoring range. You ended up taking a sack. It pushed you out of field goal range right before halftime.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, right before half there. Yeah, we got to get rid of that football and making sure that we stay in there, stay in field goal range. You never want to take a sack to do that. Again, I got to look at, you know, the coverage and the protection and all those things. But, you know, we always work on that, and we have to do a better job there.
What happened to Braxton?
So the injury report I have is just Braxton. All I really have right now, I don't have anything other than this, is that obviously knee. You know, Tevin was a knee, and then Big and Bill Murray was pec, and then Tez is a shin.
Are any of those injuries severe? Are they significant?
Yeah, I don't know yet. I'll have to talk. I'll have to visit.
And the coaching staff, how do you make sure this does not compound? This is just one loss, opposed to I'm feeling like a bigger loss.
Well, I think it's having a strong mind and a strong conviction of who you are. I mean, this is one game, right? I know it's, like I said, when you lose on the last play, it's going to hurt, right? But let's go back and look at the tape, right, and then get better from this. And that's what we always do. And that's what we're going to do here.
Thanks, guys.
That was Matt Eberflus after the 18-15 loss to the Commanders on the last second Hail Mary. Man, I don't know if this is just reactionary after a loss like that, but I'm really tired of hearing what that guy has to say after losses. I really am. Like, and this has been a theme of tonight's show. I don't have the patience to keep hearing you say the same stuff. And just a couple things that stood out to me. He started it off by talking about how proud he is that his guys battled back, blah, 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 blah. You put yourself in that position. Like, don't put yourself in position that you need to fight back and then lose and then come to the podium afterwards talking about how proud you are that you're able to fight. You should have never been in that position in the first place. You just shouldn't have. So I don't want to hear about how proud you are that you battled back. He was asked why the offense wasn't able to get going. All he said was, you're looking for answers. I'm paraphrasing, but he said, yeah, you're looking for answers when the offense isn't going the way that it wasn't going. And yeah, no crap, you're looking for answers, dude. Obviously, you're looking for answers. Have the answers before you walk into the game. How about that? You don't try and figure out answers midway through a test unless you're looking at the guy next to you. You know what I mean? And copying off of him, which that's not an option in the NFL. Have the answers coming in. How do you keep this from carrying over, believe in each other, be resilient, blah, 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 blah. This really upset me. Two things about the last drive, which was two plays. It was one pass and then the Hail Mary. He's asked about the play before the Hail Mary. I think it was, let me just make sure. I think it was 13 yards to Terry McLaurin. And he was able to get out and stop the play, get to the sideline and stop the play. Let me just make sure. Terry McLaurin for 13 yards at the 48-yard line. And his answer was, you're defending touchdown there. They wouldn't have been able to throw a Hail Mary from that spot on the field. They were too far to throw a Hail Mary from that spot on the field. Tony Romo is saying during the game, you're trying to get to the sideline here to make it possible to throw a Hail Mary. You need to get within Hail Mary range. is what the Commanders were trying to do on that play. Mm-hmm. I knew that's what they were trying to do. Tony Romo knew that that's what they were trying to do. And Matt Eberflus, this great defensive mind, that he's such a great defensive mind that he's our head coach, not just our defensive coordinator, is saying you're defending touchdown there. They couldn't have scored a touchdown. The only way they could have scored a touchdown on that play is if they did like a hook and ladder. Fumble Ruski type of thing. That's the only way they were going to score a touchdown on that play. And then he says, did you think about putting extra pressure on? He says that was an option. That's why we asked the question, because we know that's an option. You don't need to tell us that's an option. We know that's an option. It's an option you chose not to take. You chose to send three guys after him, so he was able to run around for 30 seconds so they could set their 13 seconds so they could set that thing up like it was an NBA tip-off. And then finally, any thought to veto the Kramer run? He said, we practiced it. It's a one-yard play. Again, thank you, Captain Obvious. I figured you had practiced it and you didn't just run out there and try to run it for the first time ever. And it's a one-yard play. Again, it's only a one-yard. I thought you'd hand it to Doug Kramer from the 40 and hope he rips off a big one. I know it's a one-yard play, and I know you practiced it. The bottom line is you're being asked because it's a dumb play call that didn't work, dude.
That interview proved to me that his lack of awareness. Number one, he's like, oh, yeah, we really didn't throw to the tight end in the first half. Yeah, we all noticed that. And second of all, when he said, well, what about that 3rd-and-12 play? Well, what are you talking about? When? You know, where? And he wasn't even aware of that play. And so I just think he sits back and lets things happen instead of being aware and jumping in where he needs to.
I think I'm done with him. Like, I wanted him gone during the year last year. After the year, I was like, okay, cool, good second half, but let's get a fresh start with the quarterback. They didn't do that. I came into this year going, all right, you're bringing him back. Let me give him a chance. I think last night, might have been the end of that chance. I think I'm done with him. I don't know if I'm just being reactionary, but I think I'm done with Matt Eberflus. It's a Plumbers 911 Football Monday. Bears overnight to kick things off, presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and Busey Bank. Bears fall to the Commanders 18-15 on the Hail Mary. Got Dan Durbin, winner of the Cubs for a Cure auction, to sit in the co-host chair. Tyler Farengel on the other side of the glass. I'm Rami Makhlouf. We want to hear from you at 312-644-6767. We'll take more of your calls, more of your text right after this on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.